Because again, like when you're going on what the cops have.
Hey, Eric, can you talk one more time into the mic?
Hello, hello.
It's not like we have a perfect biological record of everyone on Earth, right?
No, I know, I know.
So even if they happen to have one... Okay, let's say the robber has one hair fall out. Okay, maybe they find that hair. How do you even know whose it is or if it was actually the robber's? Hundreds of people could have been in that store.
Like, you have to go from dick to dick and put it up to
the robber. All I'm saying is, how are we not at Minority Report right now?
Bro,
because the whole point of that movie
was how terrible Minority Report was. I watched that way too young. Like going back on the implications of that.
Minority Report? I don't think I've ever seen it all the
you
way
haven't
through.
Seen it?
I think I've seen it on TV.
It's a crazy Tom Cruise movie.
I think I've seen it on TV.
It's one of those internet scare movies from the early 2000s when all the directors and stuff clearly didn't
forgot, like, because Eric, like, your voice is just really it's very clear and loud.
I noticed you have a Hufflepuff sticker and no other Harry Potter sticker on there, and I love that for you.
Hufflepuff is the only
if he has two separate Ghostbusters stickers and neither of them are the original.
See, okay, this is going to be very unpopular opinion, someone my age, but yeah. I never got super in to Ghostbusters.
Excuse
like
me?
I never particularly like
is
I
that
was,
even
my
that
I was shown it, I was shown it as a kid. Okay, no. I understand that it's a cult classic and I love the movie for what it is, but it wasn't one of those things where it's like I need to buy a Ghostbusters t-shirt or a Ghostbusters sticker. Or
I
Ghostbusters.
It does blow
like,
my mind
a poster in my
how
room,
much
so.
Well, you have two.
So many people
on your
laptop, our age.
Bro.
So many people our age resonate with that movie.
I loved it
so hard.
That shit came out before you were even born.
Yeah,
it's a wild thing.
8 years before I was born.
No, we were what 0 years old when
it
came out.
84. Yeah.
What kind of nostalgia is that,
dude? Yeah. It's just one of those movies, man.
It's like so that one and Back to the Future. Those are two 80s movies that really stuck. More so
Back
to the Future. That's my favorite movie of all time.
Because that is perfect. Back to the Future slander saying it's on the same level as Ghostbusters, bro.
Really?
Bro, Back to the Future is a genius level.
Yeah, like Back to the Future is it's the perfect screenplay.
Can we talk about how the movie starts with Doc buying plutonium from actual terrorists?
Libyans
and getting murdered immediately.
They murk his ass, man. It's so
because
dark.
Because he bought plutonium from terrorists like it was a good idea.
And Marty was just like, yeah. Dude, Marty picks his phone up at 3 a.m. to go out and meet.
We all know the relationship between them wasn't healthy.
Obviously not.
Obviously.
Like, this guy was, 17, 18
and
years old?
And his best friend is a 63-year-old shut-in.
Easily
dude, he had connections like that?
Dude. Yeah, he was telling him, hey man, like I boosted it off of
honestly,
you know, so and so.
You couldn't make that movie nowadays because people's mind would instantly go to, oh yeah, he's clearly sexually abusive.
Yeah, there's some
well, I
going
feel like
on.
You also couldn't make that movie nowadays because everyone would try and put CGI into it, where that movie was very practical. And it was
we
very...
actually have discussed this where we've gone overboard with the CGI.
What would we dude, if I were to remake
like
Back to the
it
Future,
wasn't
yeah.
It wasn't all practical, but it was, you know, outfits and costumes and it
look, CGI has its place. We couldn't get something like Endgame without CGI.
Yeah,
and I will put some respect on Endgame's name because that movie was incredible.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
it was.
But like we also got movies like Attack of the Clones that was like
which abused CGI.
Which
yeah.
which was like the we, other spectrum.
We also got everything
that
Disney's put out in the past 2 years.
Oh man.
No, listen, I get your point. Because we were talking about it, how something like Jurassic Park, something like Aliens hits so hard.
It works.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the practical effects. Because they're filmed on location. Because they have this realness. You know, it's not some guy staring in a green screen in a room with a bunch of cameras.
Dude.
Pretending to react to a dinosaur. It's a guy reacting for
he's
real to
it.
A dinosaur animatronic.
It's did you guys ever see that video of Sir Ian McKellen just crying?
I've heard about that.
From like
I haven't
just,
seen him.
Like they were like asking him how his experience with The Hobbit was, and he's like, I was fucking in a room by myself.
Oh no.
For the entire movie. And he's like, this isn't why I became an actor. Yeah. He started crying, dude. And I was like, man.
Do you see what you've done, Peter Jackson?
That is
do you see?
It was heartbreaking.
Destruction you've done.
It's wild too, because Lord of the Rings holds up today.
Yeah.
You can watch that movie today, and you'll notice, you know, some of the orcs, the skin is a little plasticky, right? Especially with the 4K editions. That's part of the problem. We have 4K stuff, so you notice the little blemishes.
Right.
But those movies hold up today.
Oh.
And they hold up a lot better. And they will hold up. Yeah. Than a lot of the CGI crap from even 5-10 years down the line.
I mean, dude, did you watch the old Ben-Hur?
Oh, yeah.
That movie's still...
The OG?
Yeah, that
OG
movie's Ben-Hur. Still incredible. Yeah.
Isn't that like 3 hours long? I gotta watch
3 hours long.
But, okay, it's an epic, though, which is on the same Lawrence scale.
Lawrence of Arabia is amazing. Lawrence of Arabia
is another one.
It's on Vudu, guys.
The old Lawrence of Arabia is an incredible movie.
Wait, but first off, before we get any further, good to see y'all guys. Dude, cheers.
Good to see you, man. It's been a minute. It's been a minute.
Hey, guys, listeners, welcome. Welcome, everybody. It was Mooney. I'm your host, Kosi, and we're your source for commentary on everything movie, streaming, and pop culture related. I'm joined always by Wani B, and this week we're joined by our great friend, Eric. Dude, you're here.
I am here.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And as always, this episode has been recorded before a live studio ostrich. Wani B, what's on tap for today's show?
So today, Kosi, big trailer event, big trailer event on our trailer trash. We're going to go over, never stops being funny, y'all. The ostrich is judging us right now, asking why we're laughing, why he thinks this is funny.
I didn't want to ask about it until you brought it up.
I'm sorry, man. Yeah, he's chilling.
He's a union actor, so we can't fire him.
I'm not paying that motherfucker.
This room is too small for the four of us.
Listen, y'all, today we go, our trailer trash mainly focuses on the new Wolverine versus Deadpool trailer. Biggest Disney event of the summer. Biggest movie event of the summer, really.
It is going to, so this was the first, how many trailers have there been out?
Second one.
This is the second main trailer.
The first one came out Super Bowl.
Oh wow! So February.
They're really quick with
there was
turning
a teaser
out.
A while back, wasn't there too?
Okay,
sort of.
But yeah. Anyways, after our trailer trash, we'll go into a review of Late Night with the Devil, big spooky movie, and then Kosi will take us through his. Call it the 824 conspiracy theory.
Yeah, want me to get my QAnon on? We can if you want to. So yeah, it's
let's
later
hear
on
it, Kosi. Let's hear what you have to say about these.
But not now. We have a guest. What we do with the guest here?
We introduce our guest. So Eric, love to have you, buddy.
Thank you.
I have known Eric since high school. Really, mostly we got along in college, but we went to the same high school.
Mm-hmm.
Been friends a long time. Been together a long time. Absolutely great guy. Eric, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born and raised in Texas, and moved to Arizona a little bit after college for like a year and some change, and came back to hang out with all my friends again.
So real quick, how many scorpions did you run into in Arizona? Because the audience wants to know.
Be honest, Eric. This is you're amongst friends.
I feel like it was just a bad... So everyone just says it was a bad area. There's apparently specific parts of Arizona that are just... Like, some have scorpions, some don't. And the place that I was at just, like, happened to have... Man, they would come up, like, the shower drain. Like, I would be in the shower.
Man. Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, dude. There was one guy told me a story. I was like, how are these getting into my place? I don't get it. I don't understand. I'm closing my doors. I'm not opening my windows. What is going on? And the guy from the apartment is just like, yeah, sometimes what happens. So there's a lot of palm trees in Arizona.
Yes.
Like a lot of palm trees in Arizona.
Okay.
Like exotic plant and reptiles, like sales in Arizona are huge. Like people, if you have a cool looking cactus on your yard, people will knock and try and buy it so they can resell it for like,
it sounds like Florida almost.
Dude, it's crazy out there in the desert.
Okay.
So, there's palm trees everywhere. And what these scorpions like to do is they'll climb in on the top of the palm trees, and when it's super windy, it will blow them on like people's roofs and shit. So what will happen is they will get inside like your I'm looking for it, like those,
like your air vents.
Oh, your air vents.
And they'll because it's cold, They want shelter and they want warmth, so they'll crawl near air vents and they'll just chill. And you won't notice them until it's summer and you blast that AC and it blows all of them into your apartment, dude. And it's like,
this sounds like the worst experience possible.
I'm not saying that's like, you know, block your air vents. Most of my friends who lived in other apartment complexes are like, dude, I got stung like once in my life. Like, what is going on?
So it's like a scorpion season.
I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But dude, like,
I just say getting stung once by scorpions is way too much.
That's enough.
Super territorial. Like, I was getting water one night. I woke up and I was getting water one night and I just stepped like near the couch and it ran from under the couch and just stung me. And because it's just like, this is my space, dude.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So in your own house, this guy is taking over.
And I ran into a lot of babies, too. And those were the worst because they
really.
So they don't know how to. When an adult looks at you, they essentially size you up and they're like, all right, I can't kill you, but I can give you enough to let you be like, hey, man.
Twice.
Oh, babies don't know that. So they give you everything they have and then they pass out for a little bit. So like they give you more than an adult would.
You know, I had that same problem with flies. Most mature flies don't bother me. I got some toxic blood. But the little baby flies don't know any better, so they got to eat something. And they come at me, bro. It's terrible.
I'll eat this, man.
Man, this is a lot more. I'm learning a lot more about scorpions than I ever hoped to.
Yeah.
I have been stung by scorpions exactly 0 times. And if I ever deviate from that, it'll be a huge disappointment.
So, like, okay, when – did you guys ever go – this might be weird, but did you guys ever go like frog hunting when y'all were kids?
What? No, man. That's some white ass shit.
We made frog hunting.
Just like go outside and look for frogs when you were a kid.
So no. I want to clarify for the audience, Eric is the first white guy we've had on the podcast.
wait, what? I swear we're not racist.
Okay, so I'm getting somewhere with this. People in Arizona, when they were kids, they would go scorpion hunting. That was a thing. Like they would, so they sell blacklight flashlights. So the number one rule, like Scorpion 101, is if you see a scorpion in your apartment, like in the room that you're in,
run.
Go beyond all reason, turn off the lights and turn on a blacklight because you'll be able to see it 10 times fast. And you do. You spot it immediately.
Really?
Because they almost like glow in the dark under that thing.
Huh.
Oh,
so you could spot it on the other side of the room where and the lights are on because they're like almost like white and tannish and they're almost like see-through. So you can't see them that well. So like you have to literally turn off the lights and use. Dude, they sell them at gas stations. They sell them at corner stores, CVS.
Hopefully,
they sell them everywhere.
Hopefully, you ain't been jacking off everywhere.
Yeah, man.
That's also the
downside. I don't know if this is chase or scorpions.
I could
dude.
Never masturbate in my room because scorpions are everywhere, and I was afraid that
the scorpion's like, dude, your room is filthy.
I did learn something crazy about scorpions, though. Is that
more?
So one of my friends showed me he caught a scorpion in like a jar. That was outside of his house, and he was like, dude, come check this out. Come look at this. And he's like, if you put like vodka or tequila on their backs, it reacts with something that they secrete or something like that, which ends up burning them. And because it's like also super high alcohol content, and it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So they'll start stinging themselves in the back, thinking that something's attacking them, and they'll fucking die.
All right.
How metal is that?
That's super
metal.
That's
low-key horrific, though, bro.
How metal is that?
That's kind of like, I feel kind of bad for the scorpions. I didn't think that was going to happen on this show.
For our listeners out there, if y'all can confirm that, that's
like, I'm low-key an animal lover. Like, scorpions suck, but, you know, they're not wasps. You know, they don't deserve to die.
I didn't know this was going to happen either. I was not in control of this situation. This was the first time I experienced this, but it happened, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen. But
can we take a second? What's another bullshit thing to get stung by, which most people hopefully won't experience?
Mm-hmm.
Sea urchins. You ever been stung by a sea urchin?
No, I thought you were going to say a centipede, because I've been stung by a centipede.
Those black
before.
Spiky thingies, like the,
yeah,
little,
the in the sea
beach ball with
yeah,
like spikes
it looks
coming out of it.
Like, yeah, a little okay. Spiky beach ball.
People usually step on them with a lot of pressure because they're walking.
Oh
I once,
man,
so okay. I was on
really up.
I was on a shallow beach in Hawaii. We're not nice family vacation.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of rocks and stuff, right? Well, you're not that deep. You're like 2 feet in deep. It's like a kiddie pool almost.
God,
so you're pretty far
man.
In. And at one point, you know, I'm walking, moving my foot forward, and I kicked. I thought it was like particularly sharp rock. Like I felt like a sharp pain. I thought I might be cut myself a little bit, and the sea water was just making it feel worse. Mm-hmm. Keep going for a couple minutes, and suddenly just debilitating pain.
Oh, man.
Unbelievable amounts of pain. Oh,
dude.
Yo, I can't stress this enough. When I finally got out and saw this, so you see a sea urchin, it's like a spiky ball, right? You think like a porcupine or a hedgehog, where if you get stung by it, you'll, or like a bee, where you'll see like sharp needles sticking out of your skin. Mm. That's not how that works. That stuff burrows itself under your skin. That stuff, it looks like, you know, in like horror movies when the veins like start getting dark and like you see like people like freezing, yeah, or that's what it looks like in real life. Oh, it doesn't look, God, like you have stuff, dude, sticking out of you. It looked like it had burrowed into my skin.
That's insane.
Like in The Mummy where it went under that, yeah, guy's skin. Yeah,
that's exactly
skin,
what it looks like. Oh, it looked like, man, I had like in my, screw veins that, there were these, dude, dark spiky, jeez, coverings. I couldn't walk for multiple days. I, oh, just straight up could not walk.
Oh.
Straight up could not walk. Dude. I've been stung by a bee, and that, it was bad. My hand, my whole hand swelled up, but I could not walk. I had to like go around in a wheelchair. God, I was in Hawaii, crazy, too. I was supposed to be having a fun time on family vacation.
Nope.
Y'all.
That's insane, man.
I just want to say, I've eaten sea urchin sushi, and it felt like a victory. Like, fuck you guys.
I've never been stung by anything in the ocean before.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend jellyfish.
Not, yeah, I've seen, yeah, yeah,
jellyfish.
I've seen jellyfish, but
heard of that one. Never,
I've never
got it,
like actually got nipped or bit or pinched or.
Also, pro tip: if you don't have a lifeguard nearby, apparently you're supposed to pee on it if you get stung by, you, a jellyfish.
Are. I saw that,
you,
on Friends.
But
I thought they were
have
like bullshit.
Vinegar. That's an actual better solution. It's just if you don't have anything better, pee on your own leg.
Hey, you heard it here first, folks, guys. Just pee on your friends if they're stung by a jellyfish.
Dude, that's...
Or I mean, sea urchin. I think jellyfish is...
Doesn't probably matter. Just pee on your friends.
Just pee on your friends.
I knew a guy that got... I knew a guy that got hit by a lionfish.
Hey,
one time.
Hey, Eric. Okay?
How emergency room, I'm guessing?
It was, he went to the ICU.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long?
He was there for like, I think like 6 to 8 hours.
Oh. It's a lot of money.
Okay, so granted, this...
The money hurts almost worse, yeah, than the...
This person was like an acquaintance of like, just like some dude I met at like a job, but he was like, yeah, dude, like I was swimming. I forgot where he was on vacation. He was like, I was with my wife and I felt like something took a chunk out of my leg, no, and I couldn't move it. And when I got out of the water, I was like, my leg is fine. And I was like, I need to go to the hospital. And they were like, oh, dude, you got hit by a lionfish. And he was like,
I gotta look this up.
What, dude, the hell, they look
they look really cool.
They look really fucking cool. But
they look,
apparently
they
they're
look
super
like something
toxic
that deserves to be called a lionfish.
Like,
yeah, no.
See, pull that up, Jamie.
Don't,
yeah,
no,
I'm gonna pull it up. I know y'all can't see this, but dude, that's...
Don't fuck with...
That's the cool. All right.
Honestly, don't fuck with most marine creatures.
That don't look half bad. I could, I could take one of these to the,
to the
leg. No?
I am so glad that, like, they just made, like, you know when they were doing Planet Earth, mm-hmm, and they were just like, oh, we can just have one episode about the ocean. Dude, I'm so glad they just made, like, Blue Planet as its own.
They made a whole thing.
Excellent.
Two of them.
Because, dude, how can you fit, how can you fit all of that in, what, an hour? Hour 20?
No, it's smart of them for noticing, man, that, too. Yeah,
ocean,
yeah,
is, did y'all know we have explored more of the surface of Mars than the bottom of the ocean? Or at least we've mapped out the surface of Mars better than the bottom of the ocean.
I mean, dude, it's so dark down there. How could you?
It's pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
Wait, more? We've done it more on Mars than the ocean itself?
Yeah, because it's so...
We know more about the surface of Mars
than
we do
about...
It's such
an inhospitable environment. Yeah. Well, frankly, one of the tragic things I found out recently, every photo or every video you've ever seen of a deep sea fish or animal or whatnot...
Yeah.
Has probably blinded and destroyed the life of whatever piece of life you were watching.
It blinded them?
Because they're used to it basically exactly zero light.
Darkness.
And you obviously, to take a photograph, to take a video that's worth seeing, you have to have
flash,
a very reasonable amount of light. So, I mean, it's basically considered a sacrifice. In the name of science.
Oh, no.
Basically, okay, we'll fuck up these particular fish so that we can learn more about the deep ocean.
Yeah, you know. You
which tells you something about humans' priorities. You know, we're not actually doing anything useful with that information. And if we did find something useful, we'd probably exploit it for profit more likely than using it to benefit the fish in any way.
I didn't even think about that.
That's a horrifying thing to think about.
We got to break a few eggs.
I would totally.
We got to break a few eggs to make Blue Planet.
I would totally be that guy. He was just like, whoa.
You know, I will say, though. Blue Planet 2 was some wild shit to watch. Bro, so I can't say it was a bad investment.
Earlier,
I wish I could say.
At the beginning of this year, I started falling asleep to David Attenborough, documentaries.
Good choice. Such a good choice, man.
Bro, I learned some crazy stuff.
That's why he's a goat. Yeah, man.
All right, listen, y'all. This is supposed to be a pop culture podcast, so let's pivot real quick.
Yes.
We do got to get a wildlife expert on here at some point.
Exactly. Let's get Mr. Attenborough on here. If you listen to this, right. Richard Attenborough.
I would love to have him on
here. We'd love to have you on the podcast.
No. I'll take Sigourney Weaver. She did a great job on The First Planet Earth.
That kind of sounds like Werner Herzog a little bit.
Who?
Werner Herzog.
Rich Attenborough. Man. No, but going into Deadpool 2.
Look, let's talk about Deadpool 2.
What do you think? Just all around, first thoughts.
The first thing I liked about it is, well, I don't know if I say I like, well, yeah, I did like about it. But the first thing I noticed is it's called Deadpool and Wolverine, not Wolverine and Deadpool.
Yeah, so like.
So is this a Deadpool movie?
It's a Deadpool movie.
Yeah, it's basically Deadpool 3. Like, so, yeah, so at the end of Deadpool 2, we know, like, so Wade goes multiverse hopping and he goes back to the events of X-Men Origins Wolverine. And like, he says, hey, we're going to meet up later. So it's kind of a continuation of what that is. Plus, Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman have just been kind of "quote unquote" rivals in Hollywood for years, so it's been leading up to this. And I think it's smart, instead of calling it Deadpool 3, it's Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
Deadpool is now in the MCU. It's crazy to see the Marvel Studios logo before we see Deadpool, and it didn't disappoint. I thought it was awesome,
and not just Deadpool. I mean, it's still Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman.
I don't think I could be okay with another person playing.
Well,
it'll eventually happen,
but
of course it will.
We still have him,
but we still have him.
Yeah, and he's so great.
And he's still ripped. He's still Hugh Jackman. Dude. Yeah, so
he has redefined what the role meant, because he's not a perfect casting for what was in the comics. Kind of short.
I didn't even know that as a kid that he was like that little in the comics. That's how crazy it was. I learned that later on in life.
You'll see it if you ever play Marvel versus Capcom. I never read comics too much as a kid. But if you ever play Marvel versus Capcom, you'll notice that he's very stooped over, kind of
hunched,
almost like a dwarf.
Yeah.
Almost like a dwarf kind of build.
Yeah, but these are like two, like, think about it.
I mean fantasy dwarves, not
real
but life dude, dwarves. You have to understand that Hugh Jackman is hot. And he's attractive.
He's also Australian. Australian, it's big now.
I did not know he was Australian for the longest time.
He's
him and Nicole Kidman. It blew my mind.
He's the greatest showman.
He is
the greatest showman.
Underrated film. Love that film. But listen,
Hugh Jackman owned that role so hard. It's hard to imagine anything else, because we've had good Supermans, we've had good Batmans, but we've had multiple of those, right? You can have a debate on who your favorite Superman is and not have a clear-cut wrong answer. You can have a debate on who your favorite Spider-Man is. And, it'd probably be weird if somebody said Andrew Garfield, but you can at least see where they're coming from.
I mean, look at...
There is no debate on Wolverine.
Look at the way they approached it. Like, it's... When was the last time you had a superhero who had his solo movie after the franchise? Like, Logan came out after X-Men was done.
Not just Logan, a Wolverine.
Yeah, the Wolverine. He had a movie
that had nothing to do with X-Men.
That's true.
He had a franchise running concurrently.
He had a samurai movie with Wolverine in it.
If you think of the standard template, like, if you're going to throw a superhero into the mix, that template starts with, all right, we got to have an introduction movie, like an origin movie. They kind of did that after because of how big he was. And I feel like that's...
the origin movie was which is called Origins, was the worst one.
But it also gave us Deadpool.
But hey,
when that movie came out with no special effects on the dark web? Well, not really the dark web, but on Pirate Bay.
Yeah, I remember. I remember watching like the whole. It looked like
Previous. I watched it with the wires with no special effects.
Yeah, it looked like Previous.
We were very drunk. It was very funny. It was a bad movie, so it's not like I missed out on much.
But it did a lot of world building. It did a lot of like kind of setting the table for Deadpool. It's where we first got Deadpool. To be honest, if you look back on it, that's where we first saw Ryan Reynolds in there.
Wolverine. Literally, Hugh Jackman and Wolverine have been at the forefront of superhero movies since the late 90s. You know, the superhero movie revival started with the first X-Men movie.
No, I think it was Blade 2 years early. But I get what you're saying.
2 years before when, hey, X-Men? When, how far after Blade did Punisher come out? The Thomas Jane.
Yeah, so Blade probably was a couple years. So Blade was 98, and then we get X-Men 2000. Then Punisher was 2004, God, so 4 years after that.
That was such a good movie.
Yeah, so a year after X2.
Okay, I thought X-Men was first.
It often gets mixed up. Yeah, but I think because Blade was like, they didn't really lean into being, but it's still
check the dates on that, Cozy, just to make sure for the audience.
Yeah, I'm very
I believe you, but still.
Yeah, I can definitely look that up.
Look that up, Jamie.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that in Blade 2?
Motherfucker's always trying to skate up, dude. I skate uphill.
Wesley Snipes and the director got into it. Like, they just kept fighting so much that Wesley Snipes refused to open his eyes for a scene. So they had to CGI his eyes opening.
I think that was Blade 3, actually.
Yeah, dude, that's a real thing.
I think that's Blade 3, actually.
Blade 3, okay. If you go back and look at it, and it's...
That's awesome.
It was like a hot mess. Was like when Justice League Zack Snyder CGI'd the mustache off of...
Oh, God.
Off of Henry Cavill, dude.
Oh, man, that's awful. It wasn't Zack Snyder. It was Joss Whedon.
But this one was just out of spite instead of a contract. He was like, I'm not going to open my eyes.
Yeah, but yes. So Blade was 98, and
X-Men was 2000.
X-Men was in 2000, 2 years later. So yeah, you're right. So Hugh was like one of those perfect castings where like he's the character.
Because that was a big break after Batman and Robin.
3 years. No, a one-year break because Blade came out the following year.
Oh, I thought it was Batman and Robin was 95.
It was not. Batman Forever was 95. So
That's fair.
I also never really cared about...
Honestly, Blade almost didn't feel like a superhero movie.
It didn't.
And I feel like that was what...
That was to his credit.
That's why it gets overlooked.
Punisher kind of felt like a superhero movie, but it felt just like a good revenge
action
movie.
Punisher at least had like the logo to kind of remind you of a superhero. I watched Blade thinking it was just a movie. It was just like
just a guy.
It was like some brother killing vampires.
It was just a movie.
Yeah.
They were just making movies like Monster and like...
That's
cool
so
vampires,
true.
Not
they're sexy in this one. They're sexy
like,
vampires.
Sexy, but like edgy, like cyberpunk vampires. Yeah, like, it wasn't like
that. Remember that
Twilight
opening scene
where it was the sparkly vampires?
Do you remember the opening scene of Blade where like the blood, the whole blood rave, like stuff like that, where to set the tone like for R-rated like Marvel movies. It's funny to say like that was like what 25
like,
years ago.
Matrix there was a throughput between that Matrix.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Underworld.
Matrix came exactly what I'm getting year. At. It was that huge like trench coat goth era.
Dark City 97 actually started it.
Sin City. You're right. Sin City had some moments as well.
Yeah, but
you remember Sin City? That was a good movie.
Yeah.
Sin City was.
But one, Dark City is another. It's an Alex Proyas movie.
You need to check out.
You can kind of see where the Matrix got the whole.
Yeah.
But another point earlier trying to make though, but in terms of like perfect castings, on the other side of this is Deadpool. See, like, so Ryan Reynolds was the first Deadpool. He was in X-Men Origins, but it was a really not
funny
so
enough,
cool
that is,
version.
This is the second time we've seen Deadpool and X-Men in a movie. But y'all gotta realize, many of you probably didn't watch it. X-Men Origins Deadpool was terrible.
It wasn't even Deadpool.
No white cracks. There was they literally sewed his mouth shut.
Yeah,
because it was still Ryan Reynolds. So the first scene he's in where he's just a normal human
just
being
going off. Yeah,
yeah. It's just the same smart mouth asshole kind of troll
he
vibe.
Didn't even have guns in that.
He had those swords.
Yeah, he has his katanas. Man. He had a twin katanas at least.
And it was fun because it's Ryan Reynolds being funny and being charismatic and doing his thing, and then they literally sewed his mouth shut.
But like they didn't know they were going to be using that again.
But I think
there's no way they knew they were going to be using that character.
The comic book character is a lot closer to the recent Deadpool movies.
Yeah.
Deadpool is a smart mouth. I haven't read the comic.
Isn't the comic character?
He's the merc like, with the mouth. That's his moniker.
Isn't the comic version why he got a revamp? Because he was just such a huge selling comic at the time.
Basically, the comic version, from what I've heard, is very similar in vibe to what the Deadpool movies were.
Yeah, Ryan
so this kind of trollish, fourth wall breaking,
Yeah.
Superpowered character.
All, like burritos and this and
yeah,
this.
And Jimmy
yeah.
Chongas and
yeah, Jimmy Chongas.
Right, so it's just this ridiculous character. Mm. So the fact that they made him this weird, serious, kind of almost tragic character where he was the good guy and it gets turned into this monster, it just didn't fit at all with what Deadpool was supposed to be.
Yeah, and then
to the point where they made fun of it in the original Deadpool movie.
And yeah, the 2016 one definitely called back. And like going into this third one, I like the fact that like we know like who's in it, we know who's making it. You know, like it's the director Sean Levy. He did Free Guy. He's directing this, but we kind of don't know. We don't know anything else. We know who the villain is. That bald head girl in there. She's playing she's playing a character called Cassandra Nova.
It looks like discount Tilda Swinton.
A little bit, but it's kind of.
How can you get a discount Tilda Swinton?
And how much does that cost?
It literally looks like they couldn't get Tilda Swinton, so they just kind of got someone that kind of looks like her.
Yeah, so it's Emma Corrin. That's the actress's name. If y'all watch The Crown,
no disrespect to Emma Corrin.
She's from The Crown.
Yeah, she played the young Princess Diana in The Crown, the recent one. She's amazing. So she's playing Cassandra Nova. Cassandra Nova is actually the evil opposite to Professor X. If any of you all watch the X-Men 97 or X-Men the Animated Series, when Professor X, when he went away at the end, he went with Lalandra of the Shi'ar Empire. So Shi'ar is this race of aliens. So in their belief system, they think that everyone has a evil opposite or Mumma-Dry.
Like a doppelganger?
Yeah. So essentially, Cassandra is that. So while Charles is in the womb, she appeared and they had like this big, like, crazy baby psychic fighting.
Wait, Charles, like, Professor X?
Yeah,
like,
when he was a little kid in his mother's womb, she was there, too. And, like, he defeated her and, like, kicked her out.
Is that why she's bald?
Yeah, that's why she's bald, Eric. Yeah, he kicked her out, and she, like, kind of, like, was a mass of just, like, cells in the gutter. And she just pulled herself together.
Revenge
mass
from cells, bro.
Yeah.
Revenge just, from the womb.
Yeah, the worst
kind of
revenge.
Ultimate story, dude. Yeah.
So she's evil Xavier.
I can get behind that. I mean, I haven't had an issue with what they've been doing with the Deadpool movies. I think they're blasts.
So I will voice some concerns.
Oh, let's hear it. Let's hear it, man.
So big part of the reason the first two Deadpool movies worked as well as they did, yes, they were irreverent and fun, but they were also very rated R. Very rated R. Very gory. Some sex. Very graphic scenes. Mm-hmm. A lot of cursing, a lot of things you can't get away with in a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, right. 1,000%.
That's not something we're used to seeing from Disney. And the trailer, while I enjoyed the trailer and had fun with it, and had fun with what they were going for, it didn't do anything to beat back against the notion that it's going to be closer to PG-13 than, you know, the kind of...
Is that what it was rated?
I'm not sure if it is, honestly.
No, it's rated R.
And, oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I definitely see like your hesitation because it is Disney. This is like their first kind of they're going whole hog. But just going back to CinemaCon, Kevin
Feige.
The fact
that it's rated R helps me feel a little bit better.
Yeah,
about it.
But Kevin Feige himself said like, "Hey, this is like we're not going to mess with the formula that is Deadpool. We're not going to change him because he's under a different umbrella. We're going to keep it going." And from the trailers, there's a lot of blood. There's a whole scene about, there's a whole bit about cocaine at the end.
It's not just
like,
the
dude, there was
blood.
That scene where he was stabbing his sides and he was shooting.
Yeah.
And like he was stabbing the dick.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There are some reasons to be optimistic. I hope so.
I see your thing.
I love the first two Deadpool. And that was my biggest concern. Listen, these properties, frankly, were not Disney properties, right? Yeah, they're Marvel adjacent, but they were Fox properties, right? Everything that we are excited to see from Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds was from what they did under Fox. Disney bought them out. They haven't been so hot lately. I think it's fair to question their recent track record. But, you know, this could be a big turnaround for them. And it kind of has to be because they don't have any other movies coming out.
Yeah. I'll say this, though,
is
too.
Is there anything, literally anything
that's
else
the only,
Disney
only
coming
movie,
out with?
Only one this year from Marvel Studios. Kevin Feige, who is the...
But also Star Wars, also Pixar. Is there a Pixar movie coming out?
Well, I don't know. I don't. There's Inside Out
2. Oh, yeah, Inside Out 2.
Inside Out 2.
Yeah,
but in terms of, like, one. Superhero Marvel, this
that's
is
a big
their,
one. There's
one.
No Star
what's,
Wars movies coming out.
What's the next... Marvel after this?
I believe it's either Captain America Brave New World.
Oh.
No, wow. I'm not sorry, not Brave New World. Oh yeah, Brave New World. That's the name of it. I think that's the next one that comes out in February.
This is the so do we know the new Captain America?
It's Sam Wilson.
Sam Wilson, the Falcon.
The Falcon.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay.
Is that what the show was about?
Is that what the show was about?
You're not racist. No, he's not black. He's just Falcon, not Black Falcon. Yeah. But yeah, that's what the show is about. Okay. It's about him and the Winter Soldier.
I never watched Winter Soldier.
It was an okay show. It was an okay show.
It wasn't great.
But going back to what I was saying though, like about just this whole thing, Kevin Feige is a guy that's been there literally from the beginning. He was a producer on the first X-Men. Like there are pictures of
was
him.
He really?
He worked with Lawrence Yuridonner.
Is he with the hat?
Yeah. Yeah. So
is he bald then too?
Not bald. Not yet. So famously actually, so Kevin Feige was the one that when they're doing like costume tests for Hugh Jackman, because even Hugh Jackman didn't really know who Wolverine was, the character. He just thought it was like an animal. Kevin Feige was the one that was like feeding him comics, and historically they were wanting to. He's the one that fought to give Hugh Jackman the cut, like the hair cut up. To
you know,
make sure
the
it looked
cut
like that.
Went a long way towards making it look like the original X-Men character.
But it's
okay. The costume is goofy.
Yeah.
Most of these comic book costumes.
It's tough to translate.
I never
to
really
live action.
The Bryan Singer outfits.
I get why they did it because they didn't really believe in this stuff in the early 2000s. So they didn't want to look like costumes. So they like, oh, let's go sleek. Let's go
I also feel like comic books were still fucking nerdy in the 2000s. Everybody was just like, we want to make them look cool.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah. So like,
you know, like
comic book accurate wasn't cool yet.
That was a big deal. Yeah. So it's weird to go back into that. But when we were teenagers, liking a lot of this stuff wasn't just like being nerdy was seen as extremely lame.
It wasn't profitable yet.
You know, still liking Pokemon even at 13 would get you called basically a little loser kid that hadn't grown up.
Yeah, dude.
Right? People stopped playing Nintendo because it was cartoony characters, or stopped watching cartoons and all this stuff and going into hard stuff. Honestly, I'm happy for the youths today that they can just be happily nerdy.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's just part of the culture.
Well, I think a lot of it is because the people who love those now have kids.
That's a big part of it.
And they're the ones making the stuff.
And they're showing. Yeah. They're kind of preserving the culture.
But there was a sea change even amongst our generation. You know, it's no longer some embarrassing. Like, again, we're 30 years old, and it's no longer some embarrassing thing to like, oh, I like Pokemon. I like Harry Potter. You know, you were almost meant to like stop liking these things as you grew up. You know, go do Madden. Go like cool stuff. Go like cool stuff like Matrix. Go like violent, tough movies, you know, be manly. No, I'm just happy for the kids today that they don't have to go through that bullshit.
And you can see just the progression.
Man, if I had Disney Plus as a child, holy shit.
Oh yeah, like just
holy shit.
All of it at your fingertips.
Oh
and
my god, dude.
Even Disney, they started going like Disney Channel was all live action stuff because again they didn't want to seem too kiddie. Again, it's just a different mindset. Animation definitely made a turnaround.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, here, okay, quick test.
Yeah.
Quick test. You guys watched, were you more of a fan of Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network?
Nickelodeon.
Cartoon Network? All right.
Yeah.
What channel, do you still remember the channel number Nickelodeon was on?
43.
Yeah.
Yep. Holy shit.
Cartoon Network was 22, right?
Yep, 22.
Yep,
yes,
yep. There we go. Yeah. There we go, dude. Yeah. Yep. See, we remember that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But like kids will have no idea what that's like.
The channel,
kids will have
having
no
to turn on the TV at a certain time to actually watch something at the specific appointed hour instead of, you know, when you felt like it. It changes your life.
Do you remember when we were kids and we wanted to go see a movie? We'd need to look in the newspaper
or call a movie phone.
Do you remember
an actual
that?
Movie phone to
we
tell you
We would just
the
show
time.
Up at the theater and just start looking at times.
And if there was nothing we liked, we would leave. It was insane.
You had to actually interact with human beings to get
it's
a ticket?
It
How
was
could you?
In like we, I feel like...
There were lines, y'all. There were lines to get movie tickets. I think you understand. You had to get there on time. You had to know getting there... You know, 15 minutes.
Yeah, there
late.
Wasn't assigned seating, so you had to just like first come, first serve.
Oh,
like
man, there
dark
wasn't
times.
Back
yeah, man,
then.
You could.
So I remember watching Matrix Reloaded when that came out. I had to watch it in like the second row of the theater because we went 20 minutes before the movie started.
That's
and
right.
That was still like, you remember when you used to go camp out in front of the movies just to get a good seat? You're going to watch a new Harry Potter movie? Better show up an hour early to just stand in line. Otherwise, you're not getting a seat.
Dude,
yep, that was your ass.
I remember being at an AMC, being in the theater so early before the movie started that they would do that dumb trivia. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That dumb trick. They're like, what movie was Jim Carrey not in? And you're like, oh, my God. He was not in The Godfather. Stop asking me this.
Was it The Godfather?
They had like weird movie trivia. I remember that. They had like the little space
they would
the little space ceiling on the AMC.
They would play the Billboard top 10 radio hits on the fucking speakers.
A lot of Coca-Cola commercials.
God. Dude, I remember seeing a movie and they played Coldplay Speed of Sound like 7 times. And I was like, what? Why?
Getting to
why is this song on somebody's
was the worst show. You had to sit there in the theater watching non-trailers for half an hour.
Yeah, this is before four times.
They don't understand,
y'all. Man, dude. And like, it's I'm glad.
They are walking up Snowy Hill both ways, having to sit for an hour before the movie even. So you remember Star Wars? How hard it was to get into that?
Dude, I couldn't.
Bro, I remember, I think the most recent back then memory I have waiting in line to get into a movie theater, like, you know, walking to a movie theater and then there's a line for people just to get into the theater itself, was the first Star Trek.
2009?
The first Chris Pine Star Trek. Okay. Yeah. The lines were almost out the theater door when that was in.
Probably the last one for me that I can kind of remember experiencing that for was Last Jedi.
I didn't see that until like the latter end of the tickets. That was in theaters for a while.
But we still had the culture of showing up early.
Yeah.
The seats weren't assigned yet.
You still had that feeling like, hey, I got to show up early to like get a good experience. Mm. I watch a lot of movies, y'all, where you ended up on the front row, nothing you could do. And let me tell you, I don't even know why they have those seats.
It's for folks that get there late, so like it's like the last.
It feels like it's like how they have seats next to the toilet on airplanes. But I've had my most memorable movie experiences are getting dizzy just watching movies.
That's how we saw the Dark Knight Rises. Just like
Dark Knight Rises was awful. Just looking up. I watched Ocean's 12. You remember that scene Ocean's 12 at the end where they keep zooming in to the people when they're getting sent to jail. Watching that from the second row legit gave me vertigo. I had to close my eyes because I was about to throw up.
When Avengers came out, they did AMC and all of them did a couple of these, but they had those days on the weekend where they gave you like special Avenger pair of 3D glasses and they played all of them. Did you guys ever do that?
I didn't do that, man. But I remember the marathon.
I did that with my brother, and you could either pick a Captain America, Hulk, Iron Man, or Thor 3D glasses. And it was like the first time because it was assigned seating. We like left to go get lunch in the middle of Thor and came back in like the middle of like Thor 2. It was like an all day event, and it was all at the theater. It was all at the movie theater. It was probably the last time I'll ever do something like that.
You know, but it was very fun. That does remind me, one thing the youth missed out on with all the assigned seating and all the quality of life they've inserted. You know, the experience.
The youths.
Yeah, quality of life. Gotta throw that in. Listen, y'all. We used to just go into a movie, finish the movie. You know, go to a 5 p.m. movie, it'll be like 8 p.m. when the movie finishes, or 7 p.m., whatever. And then you just go sneak into another movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think
they still do that. I'm
sure somebody still does, but with assigned seating, with different things.
Oh, yeah, it's a little bit harder to do that.
More tricky. A lot of the times the theaters themselves are smaller. You know, all the theaters used to have massive amounts of seats. Nowadays, they're a little more comfy and a little more cozy. You know, like 30 seats to a theater instead of 200. But like,
that used to be
a thing. You know, sneaking your friends in through the back door, all this stuff. Back when you had tickets, giving your ticket to another friend through the side door and having them come in and say they went outside for a second. Yeah. All this crap. It's a little harder to do that. There's no physical ticket stubs these days.
I've also recently been bringing in a shameless amount of whatever I wanted to eat inside a movie.
You know, frankly,
last time I went, they
honestly took away the rules against that. I was trying to hide it, but I once walked in with a whole bag from Papacito's. Just openly a bag. You could smell it.
Dude, I walked in.
It was not at all hidden. They didn't even look.
That's so shameless.
They didn't even look.
A month ago, I went to a movie by myself because all my friends were busy or in a relationship.
What a loser.
Yeah. I literally got fettuccine Alfredo and just went to go see a movie. And I had the bag because you can't put that in your pocket. So like, I had the bag.
That's why having a wife is great.
You got a big purse. I had the fork and the napkins on top, and I had my ticket, and the guy's just like, Gatorade, dog. And I'm like, yes.
No.
And dude, that, it was great, man.
That is a huge upgrade. At some point, they started having movie theaters with actual restaurants in them. You remember that, what was it called? The one in...
the Palladium?
Yeah, Palladium.
Oh, yeah.
They have Palladium sushi. Was awesome. They have bowling?
Yeah, they had a bowling alley there. They had like
But then it turns
arcade.
Out the actual theaters were crap.
They're for people that are listening,
yeah,
for people that are listening, the Palladium was advertised as a movie theater. Like, it wasn't...
It
that's
like a theme park for movies.
Yeah,
theaters.
Like, so you don't go there for bowling. You don't go there for sushi. You go there because you're watching a movie, and the amenities are sushi and bowling.
Exactly.
And everything that comes with it.
Kind of brilliant if you think about it.
It is. And for a while, I mean, is it still there?
No, it's shaking.
It's still there. Okay.
It's a Cinemark now. But
oh, is it really? Yeah. Cinemark took over. Okay, yeah. It turns out, their biggest fail was that the screen quality was crap, so they didn't have good IMAX screenings.
How do you not invest?
They didn't
have
They wouldn't change the bulbs out because it's cheaper just to like keep old bulbs. That was
basically they didn't change the projectors, all this stuff.
Big one.
But look, y'all, if you're going to a movie, especially nowadays, you know, you want the best experience.
Oh, of
course. Back then, IMAX was a nice novelty. Nowadays, you know, if you're going to see something like Oppenheimer, you're going to see the latest Marvel movie, you want to see, you know, a full IMAX.
You don't want to do yourself that disservice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But hey, you know what? Speaking of the movie experience, let's pivot real quick. Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, yeah, man. It's on Shudder, so it was in theaters, but now you can catch it now in your home on the Shudder app. So shout out to Shudder. Thanks, Shudder, for having me.
I'm sure everyone can appreciate... I don't know how to say his last name, so I've just been calling him David Dalmatian.
Dismalchin.
Okay.
Dismalchin.
That's way cooler than Dalmatian.
Yeah.
And for the record, I knew it wasn't Dalmatian.
I can't unsee that now.
I don't blame you for that pronunciation.
I can't unsee that.
I feel like all of us can say this, and maybe some listeners out there, I feel a sense of pride watching him here because we've seen him from the beginning in Dark Knight.
Oh my goodness.
Yes,
and
the creepy,
then,
guy. Creepy thin man.
And,
the creepy
and
thin
he,
man. Yeah.
And he's just been, I mean, he was in that Suicide Squad movie and he killed
He was Polka Dot Man.
And he killed it. And now he's a main lead role in a movie that was solid.
You know, the comparison I made at first was Cillian Murphy. Where if you remember Cillian Murphy from Red Eye, from some of his early
Red Eye, oh man,
he's the original Scarecrow.
Oh man, that's the airplane one, huh?
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams.
He was the creepy thin guy, right? Creepy thin guy personified, and then he expanded, got to the point where he could do in a role like Oppenheimer, do a leading role,
Skarsgård's
not be the villain.
I do now.
Oh,
Skarsgård's good, creepy thin guy.
Skarsgård's another good one.
Yes, he is.
This was David Dalmatian's. Dalmatian's.
David Dalmatian.
You got me.
It's okay.
Got me on.
It's all right.
It's all I can
pronounce.
Say now.
It's not a hard name to pronounce.
Yeah,
it's all
right, man. I say it.
This was his breakout role as far as leading man, as far as being an everyman, not being the creepy thin man.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. What did you say? Can you repeat that question?
No, just as far as his evolution.
Oh, you're just making a statement. Okay.
Yeah, just from that evolution to from creepy thin man
to normal guy.
Normal leading actor, charismatic leading actor.
Yeah.
But David is he's a great character actor, but like I think in Late Night with the Devil, we got to see him really flex every acting muscle we've seen him flex. And the movie, it kind of hangs on him. It's about him. Yeah, they're supporting characters, but like his performance, like it really, he is the beating heart, and he is.
He has the most screen time.
He has the
lines.
Most screen time, and he has the most. Like again,
and it's his story.
Yeah, it is his story.
It's focused on him.
Yeah, thank you.
The real point of the story is his drive for ratings, his drive for fame, the deal with the literal devil. It makes him create. One thing I want to shout out to, I mean, basically the plot of the movie is this guy is a late night host, kind of a Johnny Carson, but always kind of second rate, you know, always nominated, never the winner.
He's competing against Carson.
Yeah, right. Like actually in the movie,
they repeatedly reference Johnny Carson.
He is the Craig Ferguson of the Johnny Carson era.
Yes,
Conan O'Brien. He is the latest. He has the latest televised slot. He always, like, his fans are called Night Owls. You know, so it's – sorry, go on. I didn't mean
to. No, but you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
It's a good reference point for some of our – even though Craig Ferguson, even that might confuse some of the younger viewers. listen, so it has this old-timey vibe to it, this found footage vibe from the 70s.
Yeah.
You feel like you're watching a documentary. I mean, it's portrayed that way, but it really does feel like you're watching a time capsule to another era, right? The way they stylize, the way that people are dressed, they really harken back to that. We're not from that era, so we're not really nostalgic for it, but you see shades of it in
absolutely
in historical footage and, you know, old Johnny Carson clips.
Mm-hmm. And it really, this movie did a good job of like making use of the set. You know, it's taking place on like a TV set, but the movie,
like,
does
one room.
Job. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good job of like letting us see other angles, other sides to this whole set. You really drive home
they
the
kinda
fact
have
that
like
it's like a bottle episode scenes. Movie.
Exactly.
But they did a really good job with
yep.
it.
Yep,
and
it's a
it
great
gets
job.
Creepy. It's not the scariest movie ever, but it does get adequately creepy. It'll
I prefer,
put you at the edge of your seat.
I prefer intense creepy over scary now, though.
Yeah.
And A24 has been doing a really good job of that.
Yes, they have been. Yeah.
It's a very clever movie.
It is. It is.
Well, this one isn't A24, but I could definitely see how
it's that
one.
Vibe.
It definitely has a vibe. Definitely has a vibe.
A24 has this whole amounting vibe that something isn't right. And I like that, man. I like being stressed out in a movie.
Like
Hereditary taught me that being stressed out in a movie is some of the most fun I've ever had watching.
And Midsommar taught me that you can be stressed out in the freaking daytime and still not
full
know
light,
what's going to
happen. Full light and still be very stressed out.
I
will say for this movie as well, a good quality for just for horror in general. Horror movies have gotten so creative.
Oh, my God.
The fact that they can work with these low budgets. Right, they don't have to have the big green monster. They don't have to have Godzilla popping up. They don't have to pay for all the hottest actors. You know, you've let lots of movies like Barbarian, Malignant, we talked
Smile,
Hereditary,
Smile from last year,
Smile, even Megan. These movies that take these creative risks, and you know they hit it out the park. Right,
mm-hmm.
you see very original work, very original
That's
ideas.
That's exactly what I was
going to
touch on. Horror movies in the past, even like decade, have had more original ideas played on than I think any other genre in cinema.
It's definitely the
maybe
idea,
animation,
yeah,
but yeah.
The ideas are original, but definitely like what they're but they're harkening back to like the Carpenters, to the Cravens. Like mm-hmm. they're really respecting like what came before them, but also delivering something fresh and new, like a Barbarian, as you said.
It's a fresh twist. You know, there used to be a lot. You know, in the 80s and 90s, there was a bunch of slasher films.
Yeah, it was,
in
it was
the
a
2000s,
decadent
there was a bunch of, you know, serial killer kind
or like
of
Korean ghost
or,
girls
or very
whatever.
Gory, you know, stuff like Hostel, like
yeah, torture porn, yeah,
torture porn. You know, a lot of that nowadays. Again, a lot of these horror movies really have wild, out there ideas. Even something like The Blackening.
Oh yeah!
Even something like The Blackening, just the idea—you know—you're gonna have all these black folks almost make it into a comedy. But you still keep the heavy horror elements. So make it clear it's a horror movie, but just add these comedic elements to give kind of these twists. You know, in a cinema inundated with cheap CGI, well, not only with cheap, but like overly CGI'd films, a lot of superhero stuff. You know, not. Too much variety. No longer we have, you know, these rom-coms and comedy films that are high budget coming into the theater. Mm-hmm. A lot of samey movies. Almost every good horror movie. Well, obviously, this is clunkers, but almost every good horror movie is a breath of fresh air.
That's why a movie like this, Late Night of the Devil, that's why it's so effective. It harkens back to like the old days, and like not just like TV, but found footage like Blair Witch Project. I felt like some instances. I felt a little bit of a Rosemary's Baby, a little bit of The Exorcist in there. Like they're able to really.
It was like Rosemary's Baby mixed with The Network, dude.
Heavy Exorcist.
Network.
Heavy Exorcist. Vibes.
A little bit at the very end of Scanners. If anyone knows what Scanners is, it's a very. It's a. I forgot who did.
But it played on the good parts of all those things.
Yes. This director.
It paid credit to those. It was a good homage to them.
Let me give the.
Didn't
Colin
Cairns
and Colin Cairns.
You had like the kind of devil, little jump scares kind of background scenes with the devil faces, kind of like The Exorcist, right?
Yeah.
Those little like brief flashes, what do you call them, frames?
Yeah,
showing it, right? They even played on that at the end. The climax of the movie involves them kind of closing in on one of these frames in real time because they're filming it,
mm-hmm.
and then when they get to the freeze frame of the devil. Everything goes haywire.
Yeah, that's right? Where you're.
My only complaint is that the movie isn't entirely clear on what the kind of devilish creature is going for. The end kind of feels motives. like kind of a dream sequence more than something real. So it does get almost a little confusing.
Yeah, I was a little bit let down by the reveal and just by how they stuck the landing.
It didn't quite. It's not a 10 out of 10 movie.
Yeah.
Right? It did have some flaws. I'd say Barbarian was better, just speaking of that movie.
But Aaron and I, because I was sitting next to Aaron during the movie, and I, when he was in that dream with the wife, and she was like...
On her deathbed?
Yeah, and she's like, you need to stab me. Like, Aaron and I were like, man, wouldn't it be great if he ends up stabbing the girl and none of this devil shit happened, and he's just stabbing a little girl on live TV?
Oh my god. Okay.
He ruins his career murdering a child. Well, he didn't ruin his
career. He's going to jail.
Yeah. So we super were just like, oh man.
Also, that ending scene where he's trying to break out of the dream by repeating that phrase.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't Dave Randy, but I don't know if y'all know who Dave Randy is, but the skeptic guy on the movie.
Yeah, the guy, the mustache dude.
So Dave Randy basically is the same character. It's a literal stage magician that started running kind of a running bet that he would pay anyone $1 million if they gave him real proof of
this was a real person in existence that did this?
Okay, so the movie character was just based on him. But I'm talking about a real person who was a stage magician, who was a skeptic, who basically had a bet, an ongoing bet that he would pay out a large sum of money if anybody could give him conclusive scientific proof of paranormal
interesting
or psi activity. Okay. Right. So the actual role of the person in the movie is exactly how this real life human being was like, which I thought was a nice touch. It's called James Randi, I believe.
James Randi, okay.
I like that character in the movie though. Yeah.
And again, he was a stage magician. So he knew the tricks.
Yeah, he's been in the biz.
He's looking out for
skeptic was like, hey, obviously this is, you know, me doing this for entertainment. This isn't real. Anybody who tells you this is real. And they had a guy who was like that, the guy from the Biggest Douche episode in South Park, Edward something.
Oh, yeah.
The guy with the code readings.
Yeah, like the, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? He used to be really famous, have a TV show. They made fun of him as well.
Yeah, but so I guess overall, so would you guys recommend this movie listeners?
Absolutely.
Again,
absolutely.
Not a 10 out of 10. You will come out a little disappointed with the ending.
It's a fun ride, though.
It's the kind of thing, it's worth experiencing. It's, obviously, I don't know if it's still in the theaters. Theater experience helps. I love horror movie theater experiences because, you know, the audience gets scared and screams.
Yeah, no, this is a movie. Turn out all the lights. I know people are hesitant because they're like, I don't like jump scares. And listen, I don't like jump scares either. This movie doesn't prey on low-hanging fruit.
It doesn't startle you.
It
creeps you
out. It's
a
slow
build. Turn off all the lights. Yeah. Turn up the volume. Let the movie build. And then just, you know, have a fun time. This was a good movie. I was always interested when, you know, they would have the moments where they were live and then the moments where they were in black and white, behind the scenes, taking breaks. I loved that. I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, I can't wait until they're live again. Like I was looking, anticipating
so the
next time they were going back on.
The live on footage is presented like, oh, this is the tape of us taping this show live. This
it was
kind of
like an Oppenheimer black and white.
Yep. So it was like this color. Was the found footage. And then it felt like the black and white scenes were like a sneak peek behind.
Yeah,
this is like a behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the scenes, extra footage.
It felt like a behind the scenes documentary mixed in with a found footage documentary. It was very clever,
but
I really enjoyed it.
And of course, this is how you would handle it if weird shit was going on your talk show. But like, you know, face front, everything's fine, cameras off, they go in the back, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
It builds, anticipation builds. All right, we're on air again.
You know,
it's a great build.
It plays like it doesn't play like it's a show or it's a reality where fantastical things tend to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They play it like this is all BS, like this is all like a trick, a television trick.
Yeah.
But then it's not. That's the clever version. Towards the end, you actually do, even towards the end of the movie, you wonder if it's all been bullshit. You wonder if you've been taken for a ride. You wonder if it's just all TV magic. And then no. Some Satan shit comes out.
I thoroughly enjoyed that, and I think So Late Night of the Devil can be found on Shudder, and yeah, please go check that out.
So we're gonna take a special second here, talking about creepy movies, talking about scary movies. Coasty has a very special theory for us.
Dude, what's this?
The A24 universe.
Oh, the cinematic universe of A24 movies that they've been planning since the company started.
So all these are in the same universe? Is that
what you're arguing, Kosi?
It's what I'm positing to the crowd here. And the reason why I say that is because A24, if you guys know, A24 is a film distribution company. They make everything from horror to drama. Their movies have gone and win awards. But I think the one thing that everybody and you guys are overlooking is the fact that A24 has been slowly trying to tell us that a lot of their films kind of take place in the same world, or in the same universe, or multiverse. I know people hate that term, but just stay with me here. So A24, they produce, artistic, psychologically disturbing, as people would call it, mind bending. People like to use those words. And a term I don't really like. Elevated horror is what they've been known for. Elevated horror is what smarty pants people.
It's a pretentious ass term, but it's fancy pants. I can see where people are coming from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But all their movies, I think it's more like, just to kind of step out of the queue on soapbox here, I think all their movies are kind of thematically and subject matter, and have like a thematic through line that can be found from from certain movies. So starting with Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's
it was
a movie.
A24, huh?
Yeah, that's a movie that kind of posited, and it's kind of almost kind of cheating, but like it kind of frames it like, hey, all of this is happening,
everywhere all at once.
Yeah, and basically, and one
sorry for the pun, y'all.
Of course, we needed that, and of course, one can say that Michelle Yeoh could have been an extra in every single one of these movies, because it's shown that like she kind of her reach extends far beyond like just even her movie. Then going into the movie The Witch, the Anya Taylor-Joy movie that came out in
2020. That was so good.
Amazing movie.
That one was so good.
So The Witch, Hereditary, and Midsommar, they all kind of, I think, share a similar origin. They all kind of have like a coven of witches, or a coven, or a weird cult that's running things. So in The Witch, but in The Witch also, the main character, she's having self-discovery. In Hereditary, the main character Annie, the matriarch of the family, she's having a self-discovery of unfortunate things, because she's realizing that trauma, just like a lot of things, is hereditary, and it kind of like goes through the family.
Sorry.
Huh?
Sorry, good pun.
Oh, yes. And then even goes to Midsommar. Again, there seems to be a whole like this theme of trauma being passed on and trauma being like put onto people. So when I think you made a good point earlier about A24 movies there. Could you like, I don't know if you remember what you're saying about that, but you made a good point about them having just this collective theme of like, oh, like stuff is going
oh,
to hell.
Yeah, just something's not right. I love that. Like whenever I'm watching an A24 movie, and it could be, anything from, because like Saint Maud wasn't that crazy of a film.
Oh, Saint Maud, I didn't even think about it.
Like,
yes.
That wasn't even that like amped up of a film, but until like maybe like the last couple scenes. But it's, you always get that feeling that something's not right here in this place. And it's a really good vibe to build in an atmosphere of a movie like this.
Yeah.
But Kosi, let's get to the meat and potatoes. Let's give our audience what they want. You're saying these cults are related? You're saying these are the same cults?
Yeah,
thematically, I fully agree with you. These are creepy-ass movies about, I suppose, finding yourself. I don't know what the message of Midsommar was in particular.
Midsommar, there's definitely a through line of just trauma being put on to a family bloodline.
They do play with the creativity that can come from trauma, the growth that can come from trauma. It's a common trope in these A24 movies. Even Everything Everywhere was that intergenerational trauma.
And that's the one that I think that kind of spreads out. It's like it's
full QA non-cozy. Let's see this.
It's no, no, really. Like, I think even as I wrote, I was like, oh, I wanted to go full Q, but. As I was writing the whole pitch, I think there really is a thematic. It's I think it's more of a thematic through line instead of like a hey the like these cults are the cult of payment in Hereditary is actually it's the same cult from Sweden. But I do think that there is a through line of just each one of these directors understands that the world that the A24 universe exists in, it's bleak. And the inhabitants of the world really have no control over it. Some people from like, if you're an audience,
interesting that you say that.
Yeah, some audience members might not like that. Like, I understand that. Like, you're just kind of watching like destruction. But I think like A24 kind of makes that art. There's like an art. It's almost a beauty.
There's a beauty in having a movie that's really good when the bad guys win. You know,
like Hereditary.
So yeah. I don't know. I read this on some Reddit post, and I think the user said that Ari Aster said this, mm-hmm. but he said, you know, obviously the movie's about
the guy's disturbed.
Yeah.
He's super disturbed.
He said, you know, obviously Hereditary is about mental illness, but he said it's also the story of a
mentally ill to enjoy
of a generation long cult from the view of a sacrificial lamb. They have no control.
Oh yeah,
that kind of how Midsommar is.
Midsommar the same way too. They even drew it on the board for her.
But it's piggybacking on what you said. Yeah. Nobody has control over this. Their destiny has been put in place years before.
That's an interesting way to look at it because most movies are about the agency of the protagonist.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have character growth in A24 movies, but not so much agency. Right, things happen to them.
But God, and dang, it's about I love the exploration. Movie,
yeah,
it's about the exploration of how they react to it more so than the exploration of how they create the story themselves. Like a lot of these other movies,
because a movie like The Witch, because Anya Taylor-Joy's character Thomason, it is a story about her discovering that, like, hey, this life that her parents set up for her, even her beliefs in God are now questioned, and what does that do to her? And like, yeah, she's kind of on this ride where it's like she's being pushed towards this other power, other group, and like, mm-hmm. it's a descent into madness. I didn't add this, but The Lighthouse is another one that.
That's what I was about to ask you. That. I didn't.
Lighthouse A24, right?
Yeah,
I couldn't find a good time, but I was going to ask you if Lighthouse was a
like they're really good at like descending into madness these characters.
I have to mention it.
Oh yeah, man.
The Lighthouse had the wildest jacking off scene of all time.
Oh, it's one of those you can't really shake.
What was his name? Cedric Diggory?
Robert
he's
Pattinson.
Batman. Yeah,
dude, I just mentally from the start, I replaced that scene with him beating the fuck out of that seagull.
That was another all-time scene.
Same
that
thing. Was same thing.
Crazy scenes.
Dude,
most of the rest of the movie was intelligible. I don't think I'd watch it again. I don't know if I can recommend that movie.
That seagull's.
He destroyed that seagull. Y'all have to watch this scene.
Fight back.
I don't
fight
care
back.
Who you are.
If you're not going to watch the movie, type in Robert Pattinson fight seagull. Like
and Robert
Google.
Pattinson jacking off because you have
to see
that scene off.
Wait,
too.
No,
I need y'all to understand.
Okay.
That's just an
it was a very aggressive scene. Both were.
He destroyed his own dick. I do not, like, he had a very calloused hand. I do not know how he managed that.
So y'all.
Honestly impressive in a sense.
Y'all were behind the idea that he was a serial killer. He was on the run from job to job, right?
He didn't like he had a murky
Wait,
past. Like,
the Lighthouse,
yeah,
yeah. Robert Pattinson. So he, when he gets there, Willem Dafoe is trying to ask him about himself or about his life, and he finds out that he worked at a lumber yard. And
so he's Dexter. Now we find
but
out.
But he, you eventually find out that he killed his coworker and had to flee. So he took this job, a secluded job. So like people have been I don't want to say assuming, but have been saying like, oh, he's just been doing this. So like the madness has been there. The seclusion and who he was with magnified it and brought it out.
Listen, anyone who jacks off that hard has to be demented.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you are stuck on that, dude.
It's hard not to be, bro. If you watch that movie,
you just can't shake.
I watched it with you guys.
Yeah, it was great. Oh my god, that's disturbing as well. I honestly didn't understand half of what they said. I didn't understand anything Willem Dafoe said.
At the same time, though, I feel like
we needed subtitles.
I feel like that movie being in black and white helped it.
Yeah, and again, I think it just plays
because it is a really strange movie.
It's strange,
and light plays. They mess with light a lot in that film.
Okay, and again, and I think I'm glad you're like bringing the whole idea of light, because I think in A24 movies too, they have this whole thing of, you know, the duality of like lightness, darkness. What does that mean? What does that mean to the characters in the movie? Something like so the trilogy of movies, the third one's coming out this year, but X and Pearl. So in the movie,
oh yeah, those are good.
In the movie X, I think that through, again, we are watching a descent into madness of this of this character, Pearl, in the movie X, who's old now, but in the movie, the prequel movie Pearl, she wants that fame. That fame is that light to her, but the darkness is what that fame causes her to put out into the world. She wants to be famous. She's gonna be a star. But at what cost? And that's where the darkness comes in. And again, we are watching this descent into madness, both in Pearl, also in X, as well. And then Maxine coming out later this year. I didn't add that.
That's interesting that you say that, because Late Night with the Devil is literally, I want my ratings, but at what cost?
At what cost?
That's a good. That's
there's some darkness.
Late Night with the Devil would have been a good A24 movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
A24 could really, the thorough line it could be summed up as, we're gonna take you into the madness.
Yeah, the A24 isn't. They're not afraid to just be
descend weird. Into madness is basically the plot of all their movies.
They're not afraid to be weird. Like, and they're not afraid to take chances. And I think that's their MO.
That's what I love about low budget films. We talked about practical effects earlier, right?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that these people can't rely on CGI, they can't rely on thousands of computers and artists and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to be creative. They have to catch your attention.
Yeah.
They can't just rely on, oh, it's the latest Marvel movie, it's the latest, you know, Wolverine movie, so I have to watch it to see what's going on. They have to individually grab your attention each time.
Yeah.
A lot of the highest level creativity. You know, it's not the movies that are going to win Oscars and all this stuff. But if you want to see some truly innovative, original cinema, Go Get Scared movies.
Neon Monster A24?
The Neon Demon, yes. Was. I don't think it was A24. It was.
Was it not? Okay.
No, Nicholas Winding Refn. I think he.
That was a good movie.
I love Neon Demon.
That was a good artsy horror.
I love that A24 has penetrated the consciousness so much that you just think they're movies. If you hadn't told me, I would have assumed Late Night with the Devil was an A24.
But hey, Neon Demon is an underrated movie that people aren't talking about.
Yep, Nicholas Winding Refn. It's
what else did he make?
He made Drive with the Ryan Gosling.
Oh, yeah. He made Drive.
Yeah, he made Drive. So Drive was like what? Drive is my favorite of his, but I love Neon Demon. And yeah,
Neon Demon was good.
Those two could have honestly been A24 movies, just to bring it all back around. Like it's they're really. Is like a kind of like feel. There's an energy that they have to their movies, and I think they're really being like the pulse right now of Hollywood to say, hey, we can still make middle budget movies that return. Like Civil War, that just came out, another A24 movie, had like an opening weekend of $40 million. That's like A24 is like,
hopefully we can check that out soon.
It's their biggest opening, so I've heard nothing but good things about it. There's so much to watch, but I haven't seen it yet. But I've heard.
Have you heard if it's a good movie?
I heard it's pretty good. I heard that it's not what you're expecting.
Because that's the same guy that did Ex Machina and Annihilation.
Ex Machina, Annihilation.
Every movie he's done, I'm like, that's a good
Alex flick. Garland. Yeah, it's more not to give it away for the people who are watching, but who want finally watch it. But it's more so. It's not about the conflict, but it's more so about the people that are like are taking pictures and covering the conflict.
Don't give it away for us either.
Yeah. Well, no, that's just from like the description of it. So it's really
who
great.
Who is that? I don't know his name, but he looks like Discount Pedro Pascal.
Jordy Mora?
Yeah. What else is he in?
He is Pablo Escobar in
That's
Narcos.
What it was. Yeah, he's okay.
Amazing
he's
actor.
He's fantastic.
Actor.
Yeah. I know I've seen him, and I'm just like, I like that dude, but I don't know where I've seen him
Kirsten
from.
Kirsten Dunst, Kaylee Spenny. Yeah, it's a great cast. But yeah, I just wanted to show some love to A24. I thought I'll go full Q, but really, I think they're just doing such a great job with just what they're doing and how all their films have a sort of rhyme, have a sort of palette, have a sort of texture that you can like that's kind of like consistent among all their projects.
A24 type.
Yeah, there's a definitely they've made a type and they've
done
that.
Is strong enough that you start assuming certain movies are A24 without even looking at it.
Yeah, right. That's very true.
Yeah, man.
And that's very important for a movie studio in today's kind of cutthroat market. Yeah, well, listen, y'all.
Plug of the week.
Let's head to the plug of the week.
Want to plug it up? Plug it up. So, Eric.
Let's start with you guys.
Okay. So, yeah, it's plug of the week. This is the part of the show where we plug something that we've loved. Either we've read it, played it, or anything. This plug of the week, I'm going to have two. I'm going to be a little bit greedy. My first one is a movie called Boy Kills World. We were talking about the Skarsgård brothers. So, Bill Skarsgård, another creepy thin man. He's actually... He's one of those handsome thin men that's like, he looks weird, but he's handsome.
He's like too handsome to be a creepy thin man.
Yeah, yeah. But he's great. So
you got to understand, creepy thin man is a very specific connotation if you've ever watched Charlie's Angels, OG. Not the OG, actually. My mistake. The 2000s OG.
Fun fact. That's George McFly from Back to the Future.
Yes,
that
is George McFly.
Yeah, shout out to
His literal character name is Creepy Thin Man. We're not making this up.
Yeah, so Bill Skarsgård plays Boy. He's actually voiced by Bob's Burgers' H. John Benjamin. He plays a boy
Archer.
Archer plays he's a boy that's been, you know, it's the typical revenge story. A boy has been wronged as a kid. He's trained by a shaman in the woods, played by Yayan Ruihan of the raid fame. He played Mad Dog and Sad Dog.
When did this come out?
It comes out this week on the 26th.
Come out. Boy Kills World.
Yeah, called Boy Kills World. Famke Janssen. She was Jean Grey in the X Men movies. She's in it. Jessica Roth. She was in Happy Death Day. Isaiah Mustafa. He was the Old Spice guy. He was also in It Chapter Two.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one? The first one or the second one?
The second one. He was a grown up black kid in that movie. I'm forgetting his name, but Charles Copley, who's also, we just saw him in Monkey Man, and Andrew Koji. We just saw him in Snake Eyes. So it's a star-studded cast. It's a great revenge movie. Great action. It has a great kind of energy. I've never seen Moritz Moore. He's the director. He's the guy that directed it. I'm not really used to his work, but he definitely has a voice, definitely has a visual flair and style, and I'm excited for what he does next. So I highly recommend Boy Kills World. It comes out in nationwide April 26th. That's my first one, and just my quick second plug of the week. Shout out to Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush got so back in the day, Reggie Bush is one of the greatest college football players ever
Heisman.
Play. Yeah, he won the Heisman.
Not anymore.
2005. Yeah. In 2010, he got in trouble. Like, they realized that, hey, he kind of broke some rules regarding his recruitment, so they took away his Heisman trophy. Just this morning, it was announced that he's been reinstated as a Heisman winner. So his Heisman,
for real?
Yeah. So nice. Reggie Bush's Heisman is valid because nowadays
Super Bowl winner too,
Super Bowl winner too.
Was also, it between him and Young?
Yes,
that year.
Yes. 2005,
Vince Young,
I believe.
Yes.
Vince Young and yes,
yeah. Vince Young, yes. Young, but it was clearly Reggie Bush getting the Heisman.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Vince Young won the trophy. The trophy
Bush
that counted
for USC.
USC.
Okay.
Yeah.
USC. That was back when
my favorite guy ever.
Yeah. Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
So yeah, just a huge shout out to Reggie Bush, and just like seeing how the landscape's changed because now players are now getting paid for their money. So shout out to Reggie. So that's my plug of the week.
Nice.
So my plug of the week, I'm gonna plug Guy Ritchie. Actually, just in general.
Oh, doesn't he have a new flick? Yeah.
Yes, he does have a new flick, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Funny enough, it actually reminded me more almost of a Matthew Vaughn film.
Did play like a Matthew Vaughn movie.
If you've ever watched Kingsman, those kinds of movies.
Oh, is that
movies.
Matthew Vaughn?
Yeah.
Okay.
If Matthew Vaughn did Inglourious Basterds, that's how
is
I...
Is it out yet?
It's out.
It's
yeah.
out,
is it good?
It's out in theater. It's fun.
I had fun
it's
with
not
it.
A 10 out of 10 flick by any means.
Yeah. I love that dude who plays Reacher.
Yeah, Reacher.
Yeah, the guy who plays
Superman's
Reacher.
In
Henry
there, yeah.
Cavill's in
yeah.
there. The guy from Crazy Rich Asians, Nick.
Henry Golding's in it, yeah.
a lot of people you'll recognize.
Gonzalez, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people you'll recognize. But I want to shout out Guy Ritchie in general because Snatch, The Gentleman.
Oh, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
I like this Aladdin. I know folks didn't like it. Aladdin, I enjoyed Aladdin.
I honestly thought Gentleman was underrated.
I love The Gentleman.
I thought that was
underrated. Did he do that Netflix show that's out that people like?
No. It is still The Gentleman. Yeah, it is still The Gentleman, but Guy Ritchie didn't do it.
Okay. Okay.
Right. It's based on the movie.
Okay.
Based on his movie.
He has a certain type, this kind of fast-talking, clever, almost Tarantino vibe. As far as dialogue,
Edgar Wright vibe in terms of like shot selection.
Yeah, Edward Wright kind of vibe.
Pans in, yeah.
More, I guess, more kind of grimy than Tarantino. Yeah. Tarantino almost has this kind of slick style to this movie.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie's not polished.
A little less polished. The dialogue is polished, but the characters, the people.
They're rough.
A little bit more rough.
They're rough.
Right.
Yeah. But you love them.
Snatch in particular is an all time classic. Deserves to be watched by everyone. But this new movie, I recommend it, Eric.
Nice.
It's a fun movie.
Good.
Again, you're not going to go away thinking it's going to win an Oscar or Movie of the Year or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll have
to. But all the characters are fun. The ending does drag a little bit. The movie's most fun when it's kind of a hijinks, fun action thriller.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely recommend it. But what about you, Eric? What's your plug of the week?
Well, I have been in anticipation for the revival. I've been rewatching King of the Hill, and
it's coming.
I gotta give it a shout out, man. It holds up, and it's still
it does hold up. Y'all.
It's still so great. Well, Bobby Hill and I have the same birthday.
Really? Oh man!
So I owe it to myself. I was like, as soon as I heard that they were bringing it back, Mike Judge signed on, and he got. The only person that won't be there is the guy who voiced Dale because he passed away.
Yeah, man.
He also played Joseph, I think.
Oh
yeah,
that's funny.
Oh wow, okay.
Or like some other people, maybe wasn't. But anyways,
they never really addressed.
It's still
that Joseph was Dale's. Anyway, go ahead.
It's still a great show.
It's fun.
Still a great,
it's fun to watch.
Hilarious show. Good Texas humor.
Texas pride, y'all.
Yeah, man. Woo! It's still great. I do want to end with something.
Oh yeah,
I want to end with a question.
Yes.
How do you guys feel about the choice of the new James Bond?
Who is the new James Bond?
The guy from Bullet Train and Kick-Ass.
Aaron Taylor Johnson? Is that
they chose him over Henry Cavill, and I wanted to ask you guys how y'all felt about it.
You know what?
Man.
Because I really wanted Superman.
Oh, man.
To play that's the new tough James because Bond. If you've seen
it is tough. They're both
if
great.
If you've seen Argyle, the hairdo was terrible, but you know Henry Cavill can do that role.
He's got it.
But I like me some Aaron
they
Taylor
They were both
Johnson.
Great choices.
I like me some Aaron Taylor Johnson as well. I don't think I've ever just been disappointed. He doesn't jump out the screen, right? He's not. Probably not anybody's favorite actor, but I've never seen a role he's done where it's
he's never not delivered in a role before.
I think both of them would have killed it, but I really wanted Cavill to land a role to get him a lot more work because
Henry Cavill has been low-key kind of cursed lately, and I don't get why. He was amazing as Superman.
Yeah.
I don't know why James Gunn didn't keep him as... I mean, I know why he didn't keep him as Superman, but he played such a good...
Why?
He's revamping the whole...
Yeah, he's revamping it.
Revamping the whole everything, man.
Yeah.
And I mean...
I don't know what it is. I don't know why he keeps losing these roles. I love everything...
I love
everything Henry Cavill has been in.
He was a runner up to Daniel Craig for the first time around.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't get that, but got Superman.
I also love that he's like the nerd king. Like he's like the most handsome.
He's got Warhammer coming out.
He's like the new Jon Hamm.
He's also he's
like incredibly handsome, awesome dude.
But also very relatable.
Kind of nerdy, chill, fun dude where you can see yourself being friends with him. Shout out to Henry Cavill.
He's also working on Highlander as well with Chad Stahelski.
Nice.
Henry Cavill would be perfect for Highlander.
I'm surprised you guys didn't hear about the James Bond announcement.
Yeah,
Weeks ago, but I'm a huge James Bond fan.
I know,
immediately.
Pierce Brosnan back in the day, bro.
Dude, there were only two good movies that he had. GoldenEye.
Die Another Day. If you don't say Die Another Day, I'm going to be upset.
Dude, it's The World Is Not Enough. What are you talking about?
You don't like Die Another Day?
Dude, The World Is Not Enough.
Okay.
The World Is Not Enough is good, but come on, you don't like Die Another Day?
They're all great, all right, but all right. In terms of actual good movies.
But come on, Die Another Day wasn't bad.
Dude, it was awful. No. What are you talking about?
It was solid, man. It was fun. It was fun as hell. It was a stupid idea, but it was so fun.
They're all fun, which is all I want a James Bond movie to be.
Exactly.
I want a fun... I look at James Bond movies now the way I look at Transformers movies. They don't have to be good movies. I just want them to be fun. I want to be a fun ride.
Casino Royale was an actual good movie.
Yeah, that was a good one. So was Skyfall. Skyfall was a legit good movie.
And No Time to Die was amazing. That was the last one that came out.
Oh, man. What a good movie.
No Time to Die. Skyfall, man. All right.
I'm sorry for going over, but I wanted to get you guys.
Yeah, sorry. That was a digression real quick.
Eric, you're always welcome back. Seriously,
I appreciate it, man. I hope that you'll let me come back soon.
Hopefully we have you back soon.
We will have you have to come back because...
Absolutely.
Yeah, still have more to cover. But again, guys, this has been It Was Mooney. You can find us on Spotify under that name, It Was Mooney. Please search that and like and subscribe to us. Once again, I'm Kosi, and we have been coming live at you live from Real Hype Studios. And once again, this has been It Was Mooney with Kosi and Wani B. Adios, guys.
Adios.